If you want to be at the tip of the spear of sports performance, the answer is simple. Simply Faster is your insider's edge to maximize results with the highest quality premier sports equipment in the business. Visit Simply Faster and level up.
So Coach Holler mentioned that recently when he trains athletes, he's found or discovered that sometimes in certain tests, the tests go backwards. One of the things that's very difficult for us as coaches is when we want to show the value of our program, and if the value of our program is purely based off of numbers, which track and field, the sport in which I coach, and cross country are highly dependent upon numbers because it's an individualized sport. It's very difficult sometimes to explain to an athlete, especially very driven type A type of athletes, which are very common in track and field, especially in the distance world, why aren't their times constantly improving and going down? One of the problems with speed is that speed takes a really, really long time to develop. So when Tony's talking about certain tests in the 40, a flying 20, a flying 30, 40 meters versus 40 yards, things like that, he's mentioned before that he'll oftentimes change the tests to ensure that a PR from the last year to this year will show up. And today I'm going to talk about different strategies and things. It's not dishonest to do that. And we'll talk about why that is and why are certain things showing up in testing in terms of numbers that may not look good from the test, but then in performance, we're still getting better. And the biggest thing is, number one, you know, what tests are we talking about? Well, I think that as a coach, it depends on what sport you're coaching, what you should be testing, and what they've found, even with the NFL Combine, is that that really is position dependent. So obviously, if you're a wide receiver, you got to be able to catch the football, but you also got to be able to be pretty darn fast and be probably good at the yo-yo drill or the shuttle drill to show agility and to show speed. If you can't, you're going to have a hard time in the NFL. Again, same thing as a running back. If you don't have a great 40 and you can't get from point A to point B, you're going to have a harder time being a success in the NFL comparatively to somebody with similar stats in a similar level, in a similar conference, with similar body size. But then maybe not so important for, obviously, an offensive lineman, maybe not so much for a defensive lineman, especially an interior defensive lineman, certainly not important for the quarterback. You know, there's other tests that are more important. The Wunderlich test is a pretty high, correlation to decent performance in, at the position of quarterback, because you got to be able to read defenses, make adjustments, and those type of things. But probably even the most important thing for a really highly successful quarterback, people always look at height. Height doesn't matter. It's actually hand size. So a person like Russell Wilson does not meet that standard of height that we look for in an NFL quarterback, but definitely meets that in the standard of his hand size. He has huge, monstrous paws. So for me, what tests matter? What tests value? What do we test in our program? Well, the tests we do, we try to do every year. So because I'm a track and field coach, I've got to cast a wide net over a large different number of events in which we have to test. The first test we do is a 30-meter fly. The next test that we do is a 30-meter acceleration run. We also do a standing long jump. Apologize, my dog's walking around here, by the way, if you hear those nails on our floor. So standing long jump. The next one is 5 repeat bounds in place. No run up, just alternate bounds. We used to do a vertical leap. I'm going to tell you why we don't do that one anymore. That's no longer part of our program. We also do an overhead shot with an 8-pound plus shot put, overhead and backwards. We've added in a softball throw and basketball throw. And I know that might seem silly to you, but in the state of Missouri, we have javelin. We will do a mile test with our new athletes and our distance running athletes. And we do a hurdle skill challenge to see who has the ability to kind of naturally flow over a hurdle and who does not. And then finally, we do a gymnastics challenge to see who can walk on their hands, who can do backflips, cartwheels, and things like that. Now, for us, we do those tests because it's a sport of track and field, and that pretty much covers the bases of everything you're going to see. So for sure, the standing 30 and flying 30 correlate highest to, you know, sprinting ability. But we'll also see that to be a high correlation if you take all the sprinters out of it and then just look at distance runners, my best distance runners also tend to be the fastest amongst the distance runners, not necessarily compared to a track and field sprinter, but compared to a distance runner. Another interesting correlation that we found is our best distance runners tend to also do very well in the five standing repeat bound. Well, why is that? Simply put, they have the ability to produce repeatable power endurance, which if you look at the 800, 50% of the 800 is aerobic and 50% of it is anaerobic for a woman, and then slightly moving over a little bit to more of the anaerobic for men or a high-performing female athlete, you know, at the world level, world class, you'll see a little bit more anaerobic for that. The overhead medicine ball toss shows power and strength, or excuse me, shot put shows power and strength, but it also shows probably who potentially could be our best throwers who can project power through their hips in a short amount of space. The softball and basketball throw is to best to figure out that position for the javelin. And again, we don't want them throwing it like a football. We're coming over the top like this. Instead, the javelin is back here, flat palm, and we're taking it up the elevator to kind of figure that out. Well, when you throw a basketball, you can't throw a basketball like that. It's not going to go the direction you want. You tend to throw it like this, okay, and over. So that's why we're testing that, to try to figure out who could be the best people in that. Now, here's the other interesting thing. We test everyone in our program, every single person. And why do we test every single person in our program across all of these paradigms, except for maybe our big, huge people that we know are going to be throwers and are probably not predisposed to being a distance runner? Everybody else goes through all those tests. So a sprinter kid, the first time they come to our program, they're going to run a mile. They're going to throw the shot over their head. They're going to throw a basketball, a softball. They're going to run the standing, flying 30s. They're going to do all the jumps. And why do we do that? Because oftentimes in track and field, the benefit that we have is it's just based off of who can perform at the highest level. Doesn't matter what they look like. So in the past, some of our very, very best throwers have been just our best overall athletes who might have come into our program and been seen as a sprinter, when in reality, they're actually just meant to be a thrower. They've got a live arm or an active arm, and they're really fast through there. And so we don't want to miss out on those athletes who could really benefit our program. They aren't always going to be your biggest girl. Same thing. A kid might have run cross country and had no idea that they're a fast sprinter. And the flying 30 is a really, really important test. So talking about that in more detail, if I have one test that matters to me the most, that I've seen the highest correlation of truly elite status in track and field in my program, it is the flying 30, which goes right into what Tony talks about when he does all of his tests and they do those practices that are based over the 20 meters, 20 yards, 30 meters, 30 yards flying, because that's just teaching and promoting and encouraging maximum velocity and coordination at maximum velocity as well. What I found in my program, if you take the top 10 girls ever in my program, nine of my top 10 for a flying 30 have achieved all state status, state qualifiers, and have gone on to either be offered or to compete at the college level. The only one of those 30 girls that did not hit that status was a girl who was more interested in the social life of high school and partying with older kids and not necessarily making the best decisions, in my opinion, of what the high school experience should be. So that is a very, very, very trusted and highly correlating drill to figure out what type of kids you have. Now, in specific response to Tony's conversation about tests getting worse, sometimes you get worse at certain things because you're emphasizing other things in training that don't go to the thing you're testing any longer. So when we were doing a flying 30 or an accelerating 10 or 20 or 30 or a 40-yard sprint, yeah, you might be slightly slower to the 30 or to the 40, but then your 100-meter dash or your 200-meter dash might be better. And sometimes when we have kids in our program, like, I don't understand how that happens. It doesn't make any sense to me. Well, first of all, we're only caring about whatever you're competing at. And what's interesting is training has consequences. For example, elite 400 meter dash runners, the more elite they get when tested for not their max velocity, but their VO2 max, which is the body's ability to use oxygen in the furnace that we have in our chest, the more efficient, the more usage, the higher that score, typically means the better potential distance athlete. Well, when a 400 meter runner gets into shape, their VO2 max gets worse. Their score gets lower. And the reason why is that now the oxygen component to the 400 meter dash doesn't matter as much. You're spending less time using that part of your gas tank, which your body has three gas tanks: creatine phosphate energy system, glycolytic energy system, and that, you know, your aerobic system. Okay. So the less and less you have to use the aerobic system as part of the locomotion for getting you through the event, over time that has consequences, because training has consequences. The more you race and run longer sprints beyond 10s, 20s, 30s, 30 meter accelerations and things like that, the better you're going to be at running the 100, the 200, the 400, the less that test gets valued. Now, the trick to that is, though, is that whatever test you're going to do to keep the kids engaged, so Tony will change the test so the athletes don't think they're getting worse, because they're not getting worse. You don't want that negative psychic energy put into that. Okay? So it's really important to understand it. But year to year at that time with that test, they should be better. So even though the test, if you would test them in the 30 January and then at the end of February in the 30, they're worse. Okay? But the year after their January test, January to January is better, and February to February is better, even though it might be worse than the previous test a month earlier, they're moving in the right direction because you know the value of your training program and you no longer are focused on that one critical component. You're starting to put everything together. So yeah, I might not be as good at the standing 30, but I'm way better at the 100 meter dash. Now, another thing you have to remember is that when the regular season comes in, testing might not be as good because there's that fatigable component. So sometimes when we get into a heavy load on the track and the weight room becomes de-emphasized, a lot of guys who are football mentality, football guys emphasize the weight room, care way less about conditioning. Hence the whole reason why strength and conditioning always starts with strength and then conditioning. And most strength and conditioning coaches don't look at the C being equal to the S. They look at it as being a little C. Okay? But more importantly, what you have to understand is those guys go into the weight room, they're like, oh, my strength numbers is not as good. My snatch, my power clean, my bench, my squat, my deadlift, they've gone down. Yeah, for this portion of the year, they've gone down because that's not the emphasis in the periodization planning. The planning it from, you know, January to May or from March to May, whatever your season may be, if you have indoor track or not, the emphasis now becomes speed. And speed over what we're competing against. Not a 30, but a 100-meter dash. Then as we get into the off-season, you expect that your off-season weight numbers are going to go up, because the running portion isn't fatiguing the system to where the weight room numbers are going to continue to go down. They should come up because the running gets slightly de-emphasized for a more balanced program of weights and running. And remember, the off-season, one shouldn't supersede the other. They should be about equal. And then when you get into the football season, you know, probably your straight on sprint numbers are actually going to get worse because you're tired. But your overall success in your drills and your offensive side, defensive side, football, 7-on-7, those things should sharpen up, because that is what matters most, is timing, organization, coordination, and communication between 11 guys. So everything has a different emphasis throughout the different parts of the year. So certain tests and certain things naturally are going to get a little bit worse, potentially, because they're not being emphasized in training, and training has consequences. All right. Now, as I've already kind of previewed number three, what tests do I find most valuable? Find the flying 30 most valuable. What tests do I find the least valuable? The vertical leap. Why is that? because I found the vertical leap to be the most unreliable test. It's very hard to repeat. It's very hard to repeat with consistency. And there's a thing in mathematics and in science that are called significant figures, or AKA sig figs. The vertical leap has shown me no correlation to anything. I've had people that have had great vertical leaps and couldn't high jump to save their life. I found people that have great vertical leaps and can't sprint run to save their life. They're just really good at standing in one place and projecting vertically. Now, you and I both know that people with the highest verticals are also tend to be pretty athletic. No doubt about it. No doubt about it. If you don't have a great vertical, you're probably not a good athlete. But I've seen a lot of people with good verticals who can't put it together and project it beyond a standing jump. So a standing vertical leap, you know, doesn't tell me a lot, because a lot of people just don't even know how to jump from a standing position properly or correctly. So it's a very, very poor test. The other thing is I've seen a lot of people with really, really good verticals, but they don't know how to fold over the bar in the high jump and move that center of mass where it's under the bar, yet they're going over it. Why? Because that is an incredibly technical event that requires a lot of time for someone to be good at it, just like the pole vault. And the problem with the high jump and the pole vault psychologically is that the bar always wins. So as excited as we are at Mondo, you know, breaking the world record in the indoor pole vault and going over 20 feet and super exciting for him, okay, the bar still won. He didn't keep going up. He didn't defeat the height of the bar. You know, he didn't max out the bar yet, or the standards yet. Okay, it's still going up. It can still go higher, and you're still going to lose to it. So that requires a different psychology. So for me, the correlation there isn't great. Here's another thing. I've found really, really slow kids who have been good high jumpers, and I've found really, really bouncy and explosive kids who have been good high jumpers. Now, full disclosure, in my program, what I do and what I train and how we train, high jump has probably been, without a doubt, our very worst event. Why is that? Well, probably because everything else that we do in our program is built about projecting yourself horizontally and not vertically. Even the triple jump, even the long jump, we're building these mechanisms to go that way as opposed to that way. And what's interesting is even in the pole vault, you're still projecting yourself this way as the bar takes you up, because there's that pre-jump action where the bar actually, you start to move the bar to vertical before it ever gets back to the box. So, and on top of that, to sacrifice training time for those athletes to be successful, they have to be there all the time, which means they miss out on all of the other developmental things that are required for track, which, let's be honest, it's all about power endurance. Even the 100-meter dash, you're projecting yourself and bouncing down the track for at the minimum, of 40 plus steps down the track, repeating that explosive nature over and over and over again. It isn't this one pop, you know, and up on a J curve. So I'm willing to admit that. I'm willing to be aware of it. And I find the test not to be very valuable and valid. And that's been for decade plus of my coaching, where it just said, man, that kid should have been really great. Why is their performance doesn't do anything? So it doesn't teach me anything. So we don't do the test. How do I find out who my best high jumpers are? We go and we high jump. That's how I find out who my best high jumpers are. And then we make a decision on, is the high jump that they could be successful at more valid or a better choice than them being able to long, triple, run the one, the two, the 4x2, the 4x1? Well, one event versus six events, I think you know why I make the choices and decisions that I do as a coach. Doesn't mean we don't want to be good at that event. We want to be really, really good at that event. And one of the things we're doing to tweak this year is that after their freshman year, a lot of times kids won't go back to the high jump. We're going to give everyone a chance every year to try out a technical event all over again. Because as the body changes, as they get more experience, as they get stronger in the weight room, we will find that they will do things and have the ability to do things that they couldn't even coordinate, figure out, or were brave enough to attack. Some of that also has to do with learning vicariously. Once you see somebody do it at a high level that you compete against, you're like, oh, that's what my trail leg is supposed to look like. Oh, that's what my middle phase and my triple jump is supposed to look like. Now I get it. Because you may have a really talented kid, but they don't have another talented kid to be their physical visual mentor to show them the right way to do it. And as we get older, you need more of those people to help you down the line because you can't demonstrate everything. I mean, I'm 41 years old. I can't demonstrate everything anymore. Now, testing throughout the year. If you have an indoor season or you have a very developed off-season program and you have no competitions, testing is very important because high-level power and speed track and field athletes tend to have a warrior mental type. So if you want them to be consistent, you want them to show up and give you their all, they need to be stimulated in a competitive sense that they feel valued and they feel like they should be getting after it because they've got something to prove. And that's the way you get those athletes to step up and do the things you want them to do in practice. Tony uses a lot of testing throughout the year because early on in indoor track, you might not be getting the opportunities to compete against who you want. You might not be seeing the improvements that you want. So he uses that testing as a stimulus to get maximum efforts for maximum speed to get the job done for him, which is speed development. And speed development takes a lot of stimulation over a long period of years for that to happen. And the only way that speed development can be really developed is if you're at a 93% or higher performance level. Well, how do you get to that without the juices flowing and the adrenaline flowing from some sort of competition? You have to create competitions throughout your season to provide that extra boost of adrenaline and energy to accomplish the speed goal, the intensity goal, which will move the needle for maximum velocity efforts. Really important concept. Now, last thing, building a database. You have to build a database so you can compare it to other things. And so then when you start to compare athletes or look at athletes, you know what direction to take them. If I have a distance kid that hits this score in a flying 30 or a throw or whatever, I could start to figure out, okay, this kid's actually meant to be a 800 meter kid versus a 3200 meter kid. If I'm writing up a test for, you know, standing 30 or flying 30 and this really good standing 30 meters but doesn't have a good flying 30, well, then I got to figure out, okay, they're great at accelerating, but they're discoordinated at full speed. So we have to attack that in training because this number is really great. They're like in the top 20 all time in school history, but boy, their fly is way off. And you can start to figure that out and you can be diagnostic in how you train and attack those unique opportunities and problems that kids present to you when you coach them. Okay. Also, importantly, you can see how the athlete has improved year to year. And what we do is we score the kids and we kind of create a profile of who's the best overall kid throughout all the tests. And again, most of our tests are built towards speed and power, not endurance, because endurance can be built for everyone. And endurance can be built much quicker than speed can. But you don't want to de-emphasize speed because most of the events, including the throws, require your athlete to be fast. If you have an 800 meter runner, that 800 meter runner must be fast to be truly successful. They can't be a distance kid that comes down who's your 3200 meter kid. Okay. Now, interestingly enough, my best two 3200 meter kids that I've ever had in my program are also in my top three for my 800. And one of the two has split multiple times under 60 seconds for a 400 meters, which that's pretty good for a young lady. And I bet as an elite athlete now, she probably could be good enough to win state most years in the 400 meter dash because that speed has been maintained in part of the program and it's getting better all the time. So when you build these databases, it's really important to keep those stats every year so that the numbers and the bumpers between elite and non-elite get more and more narrow, and you can kind of figure out, okay, once these kids hit these tests in all of these times or distances, boy, oh boy, that shows they're really elite here. It also helps you give yourself a chance. Like if you got 50 freshmen, who to focus on? And I hate to say that, but it's a triage of opportunities, right? So if you've got 20 kids and here's your best three, and of your best three kids, two of them aren't really into track, you're going to need to spend a little extra time to, you know, make them enjoy it and have fun, because those kids can be the program changers for your program. It's really important. The other thing is, you need to make sure whoever's doing the tests need to be the same people every year if you can get it done. So I always do the standing 30 and flying 30 tests, and I always have the same coach help me out. So that way we can be very consistent on what we're measuring, and our measurements are accurate. It's good for record breaking, you know, and values of records, but it's also good for knowing that this is a reliable test within the errors that we constantly have. So silly enough, one year we had a foot improvement almost across the entire board for everybody in the standing long jump. And I'm like, man, those numbers are amazing. We had all these people that are really high up in the top 10 and top 15. We'll come to find out that my new coach, who never coached track and field before, was measuring from the front of their toes on the test instead of the back of their heels. And having a good, solid, consistent database helps you catch those errors too, and allows you to, as much as it stinks, throw those tests out knowing that they're not valid, or at least asking the question, hey, how are you measuring this? How is coach taking you through this? Or ask the coach themselves, you know, oh, well, we were doing this. Okay, now I know what's going on. You know, you're not going to know how to adjust back, but at least you know the validity of that test and what you can do next year to make sure the coach is trained up properly on how to build that database. So those are just things to think about when you're testing and you're coaching and training. I think it's really important to use tests throughout the year. It's also important not to value the test over the actual performance. The best test you can have is competition. And in track and field and swimming and sports like that, it's very measurable. So that's the best test. The best test is, how are you performing on competition day? Now, one last little thing to leave you on, though. If your athletes are constantly performing really, really great in practice and hitting times of workouts and training sessions that routinely are amongst some of your most elite athletes, and then they're not performing well on race day, that gives you another signal to talk about, okay, we're not so worried about the training and the performance in practice. We're more worried about emotional control, arousal control, and the pre-psychology of that athlete before the day of competition. And then that leads you to have a discussion about, what are your thoughts like? What is your sleeping pattern like? What is your food intake like? So you can narrow down. It's not so much the training. It's not so much the effort. Those things are great. It's a problem with the psychology or pre-meet and meet day rituals. Thanks, guys, for listening. I really appreciate it. If you have questions or comments, please put them below. If you have anything that you want me to talk about in the near future, please let me know as well. I try to get on here as much as I can, but obviously life sometimes gets in the way, which is a good thing, because it's kids and it's classroom and it's wife and it's coaching, all that great stuff. But I'd love to talk. I'd love to answer any questions you have. Feel free. And if you want more information for stuff like this and topics like this, please check out my book, The Sprinter's Compendium, which can be found on Amazon.com for $65. It's the best $65 you'll ever spend. It's got 50 coaches from around the world, and it's over 763 pages on information about this very thing, about training people how to reach their maximum potential in the world of speed. Thanks, guys. Peace out.